D'accord, donc on va commencer. Ok. Ça, c'est l'Afghanistan, comme vous aurez remarqué. La superficie de l'Afghanistan, c'est 652 000 km². Ce qui est juste un peu plus petit que la France, en termes de superficie. Deuxièmement, ça c'est une province. La province de Helmand, qui est une province de l'Afghanistan. Ça, la superficie est de 58 584 km². Ça, c'est gros comme la Nouvelle-Écosse. It's as big as Nova Scotia. Mais ça a la moitié de la population de Montréal. Ça produit, cette province-là, produit 90% de l'opium héroïne au niveau international, au niveau mondial. Et depuis que les forces de l'OTAN sont entrées en Afghanistan, la production de l'opium a augmenté par 40. Donc 40 fois plus aujourd'hui qu'en 2001. Et là aussi, ils se diversifient, donc ils font du hashish, marijuana, ils font pas mal d'autres choses. vous allez voir pourquoi j'amène ça. Ça, c'est tout l'Afghanistan, et vous pouvez voir que cette région-là, de Helmand, c'est, si vous voyez le cercle, c'est plutôt démesuré en tant que tel, mais ça c'est toujours la production en termes d'opiacés, d'opium. Donc ça, c'est la place, si vous voulez, de la drogue. Maintenant, ça c'est les forces de l'OTAN, où elles sont positionnées. C'est une carte, je pense, ça date de 2008, cette carte-là, environ. Maintenant, juste pour ramener en perspective, juste pour voir qui sont les forces en présence. Donc les Canadiens, les Britanniques, les Américains. Ça, c'est la région, ça c'est Helmand, c'est la province qu'on voyait, qui est la province qui produit le plus d'opium dans le monde. Qui est le producteur d'opium dans le monde, en fait. Et les provinces autour. Donc, ceux-là canadiens, ceux-là britanniques et américains. Et puis ça, c'est plus récent, ça date de 2009. Donc, c'est la répartition quasi actuelle des forces en présence en Afghanistan. Maintenant, pourquoi j'amène ça? Parce que l'opium en Afghanistan ne reste pas en Afghanistan. Ça va partout, justement, ailleurs dans le monde. Ça a des impacts vraiment directs sur notre population, même ici en Amérique. Donc, ça, c'est un peu, ça donne une idée du contexte dans lequel on se trouve en ce moment, où il y a eu des attentats en Russie. Et le chef, au niveau des bureaux, si vous voulez, des narcotiques ou des drogues en Russie, Viktor Ivanov, a lancé un appel alors qu'il était en Europe, surtout... Il a demandé aux forces de l'OTAN de faire quelque chose par rapport à la production de l'opium en Afghanistan, parce que c'était la source majeure de financement pour le terrorisme. Et comme vous savez, en Russie, il y a eu des attentats. Il y en a eu 4 attentats successifs dans les 2 dernières semaines. Donc, il y a une citation ici. Je ne sais pas si quelqu'un dans la salle voudrait la lire. N'importe qui. Ah, nerd it. Go ahead.
Afghan drug production forms and consolidates transnational organized crime in Eurasia as well as, and that is highly perilous, provides huge financial and recruiting resources to terrorist and extremist organizations, illegal infrastructures, supplies of armaments, explosives, and communication facilities aimed at operations against peaceful population. Viktor Ivanov, head of Federal Drug Control Service in Moscow.
Alors ça, c'est une des choses qu'il a dit récemment quand il s'adressait justement soit au pays de l'OTAN ou quand... Il y a une autre citation que j'ai pas mise, mais où il attaquait en fait les États-Unis d'être en connivence, d'agir avec les intérêts, avec les groupements terroristes, de les laisser en fait se financer par la drogue. Et ça crée de la tension en ce moment entre les États-Unis et la Russie. Même si, bon, peut-être que dans les médias, vous avez entendu dire qu'il y a eu un accord qui a été signé au niveau nucléaire pour les missiles. Ben, ça, c'est beaucoup plus... La question de la drogue en Afghanistan est beaucoup plus importante, en fait. Donc, je voulais amener ça. Ah oui, ben les attentats qui ont eu lieu. Là, en ce moment, la grosse affaire dans les médias, c'est de dire, OK, c'était qui, de montrer la photo de la jeune femme, des jeunes femmes qui ont fait les attentats suicides en Russie. Ça ne sert pas à grand-chose, en fait, ce que les médias nous montrent en ce moment, parce que ces choses-là étaient sues depuis longtemps par les Russes, par les services de sécurité et de renseignement en Asie et en Europe. C'est connu et c'est là où genre, la tension est en train de monter entre les États-Unis et la Russie. Parce que quand on regarde la carte avant des troupes, il y a eu la politique, soi-disant, du surge, d'envoyer en fait... des milliers de soldats américains pour mettre à terre les soldats les combattants d'Al-Qaïda qui ont été envoyés en fait c'est ça ici le surge de 17 000 troupes et puis c'était pour dans le sud mais on a un problème parce que la politique Obama a mis en place depuis qu'il est arrivé au pouvoir, ça a été de dire à ses soldats de ne pas toucher à l'opium, de laisser faire les champs d'opium, où en fait le financement pour les terroristes est cultivé. C'est à peu près ça. C'est le gagne-pain des terroristes, c'est l'opium. Donc, Ça met les Russes en colère, puis on peut comprendre pourquoi, avec genre, les attaques qui viennent d'avoir lieu. Puis, parce que en ce moment, ce qu'on voit depuis les dernières semaines, bon, il y a eu les G8, le G8 dans le coin d'Ottawa, il y avait la rencontre des pays aussi de l'Arctique. Donc, il y a des discussions qui pourraient avoir lieu. Que nous, on essaye d'inciter, que Larouche a développé en termes de politique économique au niveau international pour avoir des alliances entre les nations de la Russie, ouais, tu peux l'ouvrir, de la Russie, la Chine, l'Inde et les États-Unis. Donc, ça, c'est un potentiel qui est possible et puis que, en fait, beaucoup de nations aimeraient voir se matérialiser une alliance entre ces nations-là pour changer le système financier. Mais au même moment, on voit justement des attaques sur les États-nations, des attaques terroristes qui ont lieu. Et là, c'est là qu'il faut être capable de connecter les points, comme on dit, connect the dot, où justement, l'idée derrière les attaques en Russie, c'est d'essayer de discréditer le gouvernement et dire qu'ils ne sont pas capables de faire le travail. Tout le lobby pro-drogue, en fait, qui veut légaliser, décriminaliser, se lance là-dedans. Et puis, peut-être que vous vous rappelez de George Soros. Ben, conférence récemment aux États-Unis, où justement, ils sont en train de pousser pour dire qu'il faut amener les talibans dans le gouvernement en Afghanistan. Il faut, on ne touche pas à la drogue. Donc, on ne fait rien d'utile, en fait. Il y a les soldats qui sont là-bas, qu'ils soient canadiens, qu'ils soient américains, britanniques et autres, sont juste là, en fait, pour être des cibles, pour se faire tirer dessus. Donc ça amène en fait un nouveau, la manière que nous on l'a caractérisé. Ben, Lyndon LaRouche a fait un appel public en fait, a dit ben ça c'est un autre compte, un autre chef d'accusation en fait contre Obama. Parce qu'il est en train de laisser faire ces choses-là. C'est en train d'envenimer les relations entre les États-Unis et surtout la Russie, qui serait un des partenaires dans l'alliance des quatre puissances, Chine, Russie, Inde, États-Unis. Et puis, je voulais ajouter là-dessus, oui. Ben, quand j'ai dit que c'était une attaque sur le gouvernement pour essayer de discréditer aussi le gouvernement russe, il y a aussi le ministre des chemins ferroviaires, Vladimir Yakounine, aussi qui est attaqué là-dedans sur la question genre des grands projets de train qui pourraient être établis, ce que LaRouche a appelé le Eurasian Land Bridge, et auquel Vladimir Yakounine est en fait dévoué, sur lequel projet il se bat pour pouvoir l'accomplir, au moins du côté russe. Donc, il y a ça. Juste aussi vous donner d'autres statistiques sur la question de la drogue en Afghanistan. Les répercussions à l'extérieur. J'ai pas exactement fait une étude exhaustive, là. Je ne voulais pas nécessairement voir dans tous les pays du monde c'est quoi l'impact de la drogue de l'Afghanistan, mais au moins donner un sens des pays, en tout cas, qui sont prêts, avec lesquels on a soi-disant des problèmes, comme l'Iran. En Iran, il était reporté par Reuters que 130 000, en fait, par année, des accros à l'héroïne provenant de l'Afghanistan. 130 000, je ne sais pas si vous pouvez concevoir ce chiffre-là en termes de population. Mais un autre exemple de ça, de la quantité de l'opium qui sort de l'Afghanistan, ou en fait, la quantité qu'on arrive à arrêter, en 10 mois, et ça c'était juste d'un côté de l'Afghanistan à un point, ils ont calculé qu'en 10 mois, ils ont intercepté pour 81 tonnes métriques, ou 81 metric tons of opium. I don't know if you know how much that is, 81 metric tons.
Metric tons, is 1,000 kilograms?
That's right. So it's 81,000 kilograms, and that's here, the sugar. That's 2 kilograms. So multiply that by, or take half and multiply 40, that by
40.5.
Yeah, take half of it and multiply it by 81,000.
I have a question. What's the population of Afghanistan?
I didn't check that out. I only gave you for the Helmand province.
Because a lot of Afghanistani people, their only income is from opium. If you take
that's
that
right,
away,
that's
they'll
right.
die, and the deaths will be even more than overdoses.
Well, no, there's other things that they used to grow before. Before they actually the opium, there was almost no production of opium 40 years ago in Afghanistan. It was very negligible, and but we've seen with the different wars, with basically a 30 years war in Afghanistan, that's what the economy has become. But it's totally possible to eradicate it.
But there's like in the hospital they prescribe you opium. Like you get morphine, you get
sure in hospitals.
You get tons
okay.
of it. So instead of eradicating it, you can let the Afghanistan people grow opium for government, for countries, for health.
Well, yeah. Well,
and you
that's one thing. But it's not the same thing. We're not talking about the issue behind it is to see how, not just like it's illegal and we could tax it, like it could bring money to governments, but the issue that actually the drug policy is an imperial policy, like the idea of actually destroying the agriculture in one country to make it grow opium. It's not going to serve anybody. It's going to destroy the population there, and all around. That's really what's the policy. It's not just we want, you know, the issue is not we want more opium because we have a lot of people who need it in you know in the at the Jewish or at you know whatever hospital in Montreal, you know at Jean Tanon or elsewhere. That's not the policy that they are that these forces are waging. Like the fight is not over this, over the health of people. But when you see the consequences, like all these in Russia, it's pretty huge. And that's why the Russians are pissed at what's going on in Afghanistan right now, because what you see from these numbers is quite it's impressive. I mean, you have right now, that's what they were able to count the number. In Russia, is you have 2.5 million drug addicts. Okay, that's not just from what's coming from Afghanistan, but 90% of it is from Afghani heroin. So, and they're mostly like the age bracket, basically our age. So, and last year, 30,000 youth of our age died from overdoses. So it's not for medical purposes. That's not why they're letting the opium grow in Afghanistan.
That's more than the soldiers who died, right?
For the NATO countries, I was gonna get there. Yes, 10,000 lives. Like, I mean, that's probably a small estimate, but that's what they accounted for. Coming from overdoses, like the drug smuggling over in NATO countries, and if you take the troops. With the map of all these countries, if you look at all these countries and the troops that they've lost in Afghanistan, it's 50 times more.
But what I'm asking is because they're reliant on opium to live, so
today they are.
That's an alternative.
Are they really
policy? Yeah, they're put on the brink. Like that's what they have to do to live. They have to grow opium and sell it.
Yeah, but they also have to eat, and they're starving right now because the agriculture actually expands.
Farmers are pretty versatile in that they're pretty skilled at growing things.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine actual crops and an infrastructure to support that.
Right, so that's what I'm asking. Do you have an alternative policy? Like, do you have another policy like to implement after you take away all these drugs?
Yeah. Well, that's part of the... You can't just eradicate it. But the issue is, if you look at the last 40 years, it's conceivable just to think that, okay, well, 40 years ago, Afghanistan was not the drug producers of the world. It wasn't.
Yeah, they were mostly producing wheat.
Mostly wheat, mostly different crops. But it was replaced over the last 40 years, over, you know, a war with the Soviet Union, over the last 9 years, it was replaced. And that's where we're looking at, actually, not just the last 40 years, but the policy of the British Empire, of the drug policy that's been going on for the last two centuries. If you remember the Opium War, that was in China. But that was led by the British East India Company. So it's a longer... I'm not necessarily going to give a class today on Dope Inc. But we could.
Is the Opium War in China related to the Golden Triangle of opium production in Laos, Cambodia, and Thai, I think?
Yes, it's linked. But that's... Yeah, well, they have different regions. There's the, like you said, there's the Golden Triangle, and there's the Crescent. The Crescent is more Afghanistan.
Oh, really?
So
that was in the same year as the second or the first Opium War in China?
Well, you got me there. I don't know.
I think it's the second.
I don't know. I'll get back to you on this stuff.
All right.
But I can't tell you today.
I think that, I mean, also, we shouldn't have this picture that these farmers surviving on opium are somehow well off, because I think that would be, correct me if I'm wrong, but that would be the wrong type of understanding of the lives of these farmers.
Well, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So so they need this to survive. They need to grow this to survive.
No, they're forced to it as if slaves.
Mm-hmm.
They're forced to it. Like,
because
if
they don't grow it, they'll die.
No, they're not free. They'll get shot.
Yeah.
If you mean that way, yeah. Grow opium or get a bullet in the head.
Yeah.
But are there other mainstays of the country? For instance, like a lot of in my country, we have oil and so on, petroleum, and
mm-hmm.
the crops are sugarcane and, you know, coconut and coffee beans and so on. But
yeah.
What are the mainstays really? If you were to minus this opium, how can they really live in this country? Minus this opium, are there any specific crops that is being
actually
grown?
I didn't look really what was the specific what they were growing before they were imposed the opium, but 40 years ago, I mean the production was maybe it was around, you know, now we're talking about 90% of the drug production of the world of opium. I think it was fairly, like, negligible, like, less than 10% 40 years ago. I would have to figure out more, but
yeah,
I'm sure they were growing other stuff than opium.
It was mostly
wheat
grows really well in Afghanistan. And
so that's
if you wanted them to do that today, you could offer subsidies and help it become more profitable to grow wheat than opium if people were serious. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the policy that's where we're going. the policy since Obama, I mean, it's not that Bush was better, but since Obama came into power, it's been going worse. And so you had different generals who were in charge on the ground in Afghanistan, and most of the ones that were for the eradication of the opium were replaced. And you'll see. I need somebody else to read. Can you see well? Yeah.
January 2009, General Vance John Craddock, Supreme Allied Commander, Europe, SACUR, Mm-hmm. The highest military commander in Europe approves NATO military operations against drug traffickers, narco lords, and drug refineries and warehouses in Afghanistan. But this victory for an effective strategy is short-lived. On January 28, 2009, the German news weekly Der Spiegel receives a leak of a classified NATO document in which Craddock approves the targeting of narco traffickers and the bombing of narcotics laboratories in Afghanistan. Shortly thereafter, Craddock's rotation as Saussure ends, and the anti-opium offensive is effectively ended.
So, he was gone. And, another one? Somebody else?
January 24th, 2009, LPAC, in response to the announcement this week of the appointment of Richard Holbrooke as the Obama administration's special envoy to Pakistan and Afghanistan, Lyndon LaRouche reiterated his demand that George Soros be shut down right now. Soros, LaRouche declared, is so pivotal to the British Opium War operations, whether in Afghanistan, Pakistan, or in Mexico, and other parts of the Western Hemisphere, that no victory is possible in either of those areas so long as Soros is allowed to operate.
Mm-hmm. So it was pretty clear from the beginning that whoever you put in charge, and Richard Holbrooke, he was appointed by the Obama team to basically force in this position that they wouldn't touch the opium, to just let it grow. And at the time, well, that was really at the beginning. I mean, that's January 2009. Obama, you know, the election was in November, so it's not too long after Obama was voted in. But LaRouche was clear, and before the election, we were also clear in one of our pamphlets that we put out on George Soros that he was one of the main guy behind Obama financing him, but also behind the effort to legalize drugs and overthrow governments, is if need be to actually bring in his policies of drugs and globalization, basically. So that was pretty clear from what Lynn said at the time. There was also, after Craddock was removed, there was still other people who were there, but as you'll see, it's basically in January that that the policy was reversed. January 2009.
Obama.
That's 2 months after Obama's elected, yeah. Somebody else?
January 30th, 2009, in a recent speech at the Atlantic Council in Washington, General McKiernan argued that the opium trade is the wellspring of the insurgency, and that no success is possible without the elimination of the opium trade. In an earlier speech at the same Atlantic Council, General Barry McCaffrey had denounced the British by name for sabotaging any effort to change the NATO rules of engagement and allow for the elimination of the opium.
So that's pretty clear. I don't know if you have a question on that.
So are they saying that the opium trade in the is being diminished? Right? Or is it?
No, they said that you had generals from the U.S. side were asking to be able to be given the approval to get rid of the opium in Afghanistan, which is funding international terrorism. And they were not. They were removed from there. And this General McKiernan McCaffrey? Had denounced the British because that was basically their policy to say we don't touch it. We're just here to get Al-Qaeda. Mm. But you won't ever get it because, you know, you're an invader. You're in a foreign country. You're invading. And this, you know, the production of opium has, has increased by 40 times since 2001. So 40 times. And that's what's funding the other guy on the other side who's shooting at you. The bullets, the guns, everything that he's got to kill you has been financed by the opium.
So wouldn't you put them out of business if you legalized it?
No.
Because then...
No, it wouldn't help anything. No, because the...
You take the drugs out of the hands of the criminals, then you can deal with the drug problem more isolated.
Well, it wouldn't be more isolated. The issue is you're not going to create public good by actually giving private vice control over to the government. That's not what you
want
to do.
Be legalized are criminals.
Huh?
Only the people that don't want drugs to be legalized are criminals because they make money if it's illegal. Raises the prices.
Uh-huh. Well, that's one of the hypothesis of why the drug production had been decreased under the Taliban, because they wanted to jack up the prices on the black market. But yeah, still, it's going to kill a couple thousand, ten thousands of people that have nothing to do with this war, or you know, this is the impact. What you got to look at is that. You can have drugs for medical purposes, but that's not the intention there. The issue with the drug in Afghanistan is destruction of the nation states. So there was no reason to go there per se at the beginning. But now we have troops there. There's Canadian troops. There's troops from, you know, all NATO countries who are stuck there. And they're being told that they can't basically destroy what's financing terrorism, because that's what created the bombing in Russia. That's how they get financed. That's what's leading right now Mexico to become a narco state. That's also.
But that's because all these criminals are gaining power from it being illegal.
No, it's not from being illegal. It's because they actually want to overthrow nation states. That's the issue of globalization, is to destroy the policy, destroy the idea that you can have a government which can work in the interest of the common good. So it's, you know, it's basically that's British philosophy. That's how it works. That's how an empire works its way up. Basically, or wants to be on top. It's basically kind of going to allow these kind of policies, and it's going to wage warfare. It's going to pit one against the other, whether it's religious groups, whether it's ethnic groups, name it. You know, that's how they do it. They will finance both sides, and the way they do it is. They can use drugs. They can use different means to achieve it. But at the same time, when they're promoting drugs, they know that drugs are actually destroying people. It's not like just an idea of profit. It's actually an idea that people on drugs can't fight an empire. They will not be able to stand. So you want to drug people. That's how they attack China. Because China didn't want to get opium from the British East India Company back in the 19th century. They said, you know what, you're free trade? No. And they said, well, we're going to invade you. We're going to force it upon you. So that's the kind of policy that you want to look at. That's the arc we're situating in. Yep, but maybe I can continue a little bit, and if you have other questions, just can take them maybe at the end also. So McKernan was also tossed aside, and now we have General McChrystal, And that's the policy, that's a week ago, where they were asked, we also asked a question, but I don't think that was on March 30th. But any Matthew,
you
can read this one.
At March 30th Pentagon briefing, spokesman Jeff Morrill answered a journalist's question about whether the U.S. military in particular should get more involved in countering the drug threat in Afghanistan by stating for the record, overall counter-narcotics efforts is not a focus of our efforts. It is not a priority.
That's it. Pretty clear. Want an answer? They're not going to touch it.
Okay, and you're saying
but
the NATO countries in Afghanistan is there to not to counter narcotics, and the money they make off opium is used to fund weapons and killings and terrorism around the world, right?
The drug money is used for international terrorism.
Okay, and my question is, who's using that money? Is it the British Empire, the NATO countries, or other people who work with them?
Yeah, well, that's good questions.
Mm-hmm.
How does that money get created?
Yeah,
because
You're saying that the troops, NATO troops, are in Afghanistan, and the money they make off opium farming and cultivation is used to finance the drug addictions, terrorism.
Not the NATO troops. The NATO troops are aimed. They're like bullseye. They're standing there, supposed to bring in democracy and stuff. But they're being shot by the insurgency there.
Okay, so they're just sending soldiers over there to get killed, right?
Basically, that's the policy right now.
Okay.
Our soldiers.
And who's using the money off the opium cultivation to finance wars and terrorism? Is it the Taliban? Is it the extremists or the British Empire? The CIA?
Well, it's all one thing. That's the idea.
Okay, so the troops of this somewhat of like a diversion policies of democracies and protections and counter narcotics.
Uh-huh.
But it's just an illusion, right? They're just killing people over there.
Well, if it was to counter narcotics, why did it increase by 40 times?
Okay, so they're
since
lying.
2001.
Okay, and so either the NATO troops or the drug traffickers, it's all the same thing. It's all part of the same.
It's not that they're like buddy and they meet at the bar at the end of the day, but it's
but
all
it's
one policy.
Okay, from the U.S. and from the British Empire, right?
Well, the issue is not these. You don't want to. You have factions in governments that, and we see it with the faction that we've identified around Obama.
Uh-huh.
But the issue of George Soros, who's this guy?
Yeah, the massive drug trafficker.
That's it.
A hitman of the British Empire who's drugging all the whole world.
Yeah. So where does he get his money to actually go and get Orange and Rose Revolution in the former Soviet Union countries?
So it's not black and white. It's all mixed up together in the same.
Well, there's a faction that wants total deregulation, globalization, free trade. The might is right. How do you say that? The fittest survives, you know. And that's empire mentality. It's not like we're there's on the other side, people will say, well, actually having these wars, it's not really good for human development. Doesn't quite help. Which is I think the sane way to look at it. But that's the problem that we're facing. There's two distinct factions. We could talk about the American and British system, but that could be for another class also. Est-ce que tu as une autre question?
Non, juste savoir c'était qui derrière le financement des terroristes et les guerres et les.
We
can
go through that later.
If you want names, I don't have any.
Well, Linda LaRouche stated George Soros, right? He's
one
of the drug pushers of the British Empire.
Yeah.
Support. But But except for that, is there any like Afghan Taliban or jihadists or what?
Sure there are.
Okay, so it's a bunch of people who's...
Yeah, it's not just one guy.
Okay, so you have
bunch of
factions
people.
Of the Barack Obama initiation, you have like what, the CIA, the British Empire, like lots of...
Well, we could throw names like that, but
yeah, yeah,
that's
okay,
not
so
really going
to
help. The idea is to have a policy against
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And okay, this looks like against it, but it isn't.
So, well, the issue is, as we're looking at the situation where the Russians... You probably also have the Chinese are not too happy with this drug flowing in their country from a zone where you have U.S. military, British military, Canadian, NATO forces. So you have that situation there, and they're trying to put some pressure on the Obama administration, which is not responding at all. But at the same time, the issue is that we've been calling for the impeachment of Obama. Now, coming from, and that's a British newspaper, coming from the Telegraph, you have it right there that since Obama has passed his healthcare bill, he's not really useful to these guys like George Soros and basically his controllers in London, because the population is revolting against them. And they have a pretty good sense, since they are controlling a big part of the revolt, in the sense that we're going to see a bit later, but the groups of militias. But that was an article that was published recently in the Telegraph, or basically they're saying Obama is not popular, he's sinking down in the approval rates, he's finished, so let's replace him by General Petraeus. Now if you can read between the lines, usually if a president is impeached, it's going to be the vice president who's going to take the place. It's not the vice president. It's going to be the Speaker of the House. It's not the Speaker of the House. It's going to be, the Speaker of the Senate. If it's not him, it's going to be somebody else who was elected by the population. So why are they pushing for a general to take over and become president? What's the idea? Would it be constitutional?
Well, he's running, right, for president. He's allowed to run. Eisenhower was a general.
Oh, he's allowed. He's allowed to run. But, I mean, the idea is that you'll see more with the what's coming up. But the idea is that Obama can't do anything. Like he's totally discredited. So he's got nothing left really. Especially since he passed the healthcare bill. You have growing revolt in the population, but what we're saying is that we need to impeach him. There are other factions that want to kill him, and so when you look at where it comes from, when you look at these guys like Ambrose Evans Pritchard, who's also writing for the Telegraph, well, he was part when he was in Washington, D.C., as a Telegraph envoy in the 1990s, of creating these militias who also wanted to topple the government under Bill Clinton. So that's strange coincidence. But the issue is they're not just saying, like, you should run, in 2012, we're 14 months after Obama was elected. So the issue is, there is a setup, there is a preparation being put in place right now, actually, to assassinate Obama. And that's where we're going. Oh, that's the chef d'accusation. We can go back to this later. So, that's maybe how they looked in 1774, the militiamen. But now you have other militias, like the one that was shut down in Michigan a week and a half ago, are basically groups, armed groups, that are now voicing their disagreement with the administration, but they're not calling for impeachment. They're saying if there's something to be done, we'll shoot, you know, we'll get rid of these guys. So we're saying that's not the way to go about it. That will create more chaos than anything else. And that's why we gotta expose these guys. And that's what we've been doing in the last week, to expose where these things are coming from. And you have this guy Mike Vanderbo, who's been one of these guys which were recruited back in the 1990s at the time of the Clinton administration by Ambrose Evans Pritchard, the Telegraph journalist. He's still there. He's been resurfacing recently, and he's basically saying, "Yeah, let's create some chaos. Let's throw some bricks in people's windows. Let's stir up some shit."
Well, where did he say that? Because all he said was for the general to run in 2012. Like, where is all the incitement to violence coming from?
Oh well, I'm talking about this guy Mike Vanderbo, which is an American, you could say, operative for these groups. But I'm talking about, you know, a British journalist in the 1990s who set up militia groups in the United States to oppose the American president of the time, Bill Clinton, resurfacing today and basically telling people to throw bricks in Democratic Party offices. You know, it's right now what they're going to be doing. You can find that out if you go on his blog. But there's going to be a march on the Potomac on the 19th of April, where you're going to have groups of militias who will be armed and will walk towards Washington D.C. It's not just for camping or supply picnic. The issue is provocation against the U.S. government, and it's a setup. Like, if you have to have the assassination of the president, it would be like just like good timing. Like, wow, you have these militiamen, these extremists, and the press is trying to say, well, these are, you know, the Tea Partiers. So you just have, you know, basically it's a good setup. You know, if you're a third party into this, you come in and the president's gone, you create chaos. That's the intention coming from these financial circles. So yeah, that's a pretty interesting period that we're in.
LaRouche, I just wanted to say, LaRouche is a strategic forecaster, and he's trying to teach us all how you look for signs and what you can conclude from what's maybe coming up. You know, say it is all going to happen, but there are certain preparations LaRouche is kind of on the view.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that comes up with the, I don't know if I want to go into this right now. Let's put on this question of forecast. In a sense, there was a quote that I wanted to read from Lynn, just to get it passed to Matthew, because then we can discuss it more. But what's the necessity in terms of changing the policy right now, not to allow people to get into these, you know, gang counter gang, or, you know, are you with the president or against him? You know, that's not the issue per se. The issue is there's an attempt to destroy nation states. It's going on worldwide, and we need to bring in another policy, which is a human policy, and that's what the class is going to be about today. How basically you can be creative and get out of these paradoxes from, you know, from the a higher standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody can read this quote.
Can I read it?
Sure. Go ahead.
Super.
I've been neglecting that part.
The only way you get moral attitude of mankind of any durable value is that way. You have to show man that we have a purpose for existing in the universe, that we as a species are making a contribution to the universe, which is a necessary one and a unique one, and that becomes our moral purpose. It becomes our confidence in what it is to be a human being, that they too can participate in this creativity, and there are no limits to this creativity.
There you go.
I say it with confidence because I really mean it.
Good. Good.
And that's true.
So from there, if you have questions, but really I would just pass it to Matthew, but I think it's a good point to get into some science.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yes.